Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Astrologer's Palace, a podcast about memory and the art of astrology. My name is Andrew Watt, and I'll be your host. In this episode, we are going to be walking through the Hall of Gemini, the day rulership of the planet Mercury, the third hall of the Palace of the Zodiac. But before we do that, I figured it would be a good idea to review what it is that we know about the art of memory. The first thing that we want to bear in mind is that the artificial memory techniques described by Hugh of St. Victor or Cassiodorus or Giordano Bruno are not truly artificial memory techniques. They are methodologies of art that allow us to memorize more information than we can simply memorize by rote. The core two structures that we use in the course of this episode are called memory of place and memory of image. Memory of place involves activating the parts of your brain that know where in the house you are or where in the world you are. If you're listening to this on your commute, chances are that you can point fairly easily in the direction of your house or your home, and that you can point fairly easily in the direction of work or the grocery store. You know how to go from where you are now to where you would like to be. And if you're not careful, if I say words like grocery store or dry cleaners or your favorite restaurant, you may find yourself going off course away from your intended destination and towards the destination that I have suggested. Take a moment, if you are on the road, and remember where it is that you're going. Good. Now that you know where we're going, it's time to look at the other component of artificial memory techniques. The second part is called memory of image. In memory of image, we don't simply remember where it is that we learned something, we also remember what it looks like. The parts of our brain that memorize information tend to use images far more than they use words. The parts of our brain that know how to use words are thousands upon thousands of years younger than the parts of our brain that think in pictures. And in fact, the parts of our brain that think in pictures are thousands of years younger than the parts of our brain that think in terms of sculptural elements, like a tree on the savanna or a tiger that's moving towards us in the jungle. Visual memory, in other words, is striking. It's designed to help us remember moments of panic or high attention and high interest and perhaps high danger. As a result, images that are funny, that are grotesque in some way, or that are realistically unnerving are all likely to excite our interest and be retained by our memory for a longer period of time. So those are the two components of artificial memory. Memory of place, that is to say where you learned something, and memory of image, that is to say, a picture of the thing that you are trying to memorize, rather than strict attention to the words. In an upcoming episode, we'll interview Jenna Lee Taylor, who has some unusual experiences around memorizing words specifically and using the technique of memory of place. You'll notice that in these episodes, I have chosen to use memory of place fairly exclusively, although I also use memory of image in order to create an architectural metaphor for each of the halls of the zodiac that we will be visiting. The purpose of this is twofold. There are, in fact, in astrological historical texts, quite a large number of images that are designed to train and inform the brain that memorizes them. I haven't included all of those images. For one thing, although the material itself may be in the public domain, the translations of them may not be. However, I have found that when I memorize an architectural framework, it is easy to insert new pictures into that framework whenever I encounter them. Thus, some of you may be able to go to John Michael Greer's translation of The Shadow of the Ideas, or Scott Gosnell's translation of the 30 seals and the seal of seals, and insert the images that you find directly into the palace that we're constructing episode by episode in this podcast. So the architectural metaphor, although it will work for some people and not others, serves to connect us to the reality or the picture that we are trying to construct. With that in mind, let's cut to the chase and begin our visit to the Hall of Gemini. We begin, as we have begun in the past, by walking around an unfamiliar part of our own town or city and coming upon Zodiac Street or Zodiac Road. And turning on to Zodiac Street or Road, we find ourselves walking through an unfamiliar neighborhood with many dense houses, and it gradually opens out into a large square, quite a large square, in fact, a large open space in which there is a fenced area with a garden inside the fence. And beyond the fence, we can see a vast building, perhaps the size of a football stadium or an American football stadium or a rugby pitch, filled with stands and access ramps for people coming and going. The first floor of this vast building is of stone, and carved into the sides of it are reliefs that are suggestive of Babylon and Sumeria, Polynesia and Egypt, figures walking sideways and giant bulls with wings on them, and strange maps suggesting both cowrie shells and the stars above. The second floor of the structure is also stone, but here we see the columns of ancient Greece and Rome, the mosaic walls of Persian and Arabic architecture, and the graceful pointed arches that we see in Arabic buildings. The third floor above it is Gothic in parts and Arabic in other parts, and perhaps has influences of Indian architecture. And there are a great many windows on that floor, the third floor. And above this are the roofs, some of them painted green and some of them yellow, some of them red and some of them blue, and arranged in a very specific order. And you find yourself walking around the outside edge of the building until at last you come to an open gate. And walking through the gate, you find yourself on an easy path that goes up to an open door. And beyond the door, you find a grand staircase leading up to the second floor. And on that second floor, you find yourself turning right and going into the Hall of Ares, 3 stories tall, perhaps 30 yards long and 10 or 15 yards wide, with a huge stone plinth or pedestal in the middle of the room and the sculpture of Ares on that pedestal, the ram facing directly at you with its curved horns and frowning eyes. You pass beneath the red roof, which is dedicated to Mars and adorned with all sorts of weapons, and the green tiles of Venus are underfoot. You pass through the hall without incident, walking past the 3 statues of the Triplicities and the 3 doors that lead into the chapels of the Decans, and pass through a set of double doors into the Hall of Taurus. Here, in the Hall of Taurus, you find yourself looking up through the dim light of night outside, coming in through the windows, perhaps a hint of moonlight, the columns of purple stone on either side of the room supporting the roof in honor of the moon's exaltation in this hall, the ceiling above painted green and adorned with ribbons and combs hanging on strings in honor of Venus. And you see that there is a cage at the foot of the plinth that bears the giant sculpture of Taurus the bull, but you can see that it is empty, for no planet has its fall here in Taurus. And you walk this time along the right-hand side of the hall, the side that contains the 5 doors of the terms, the first door with the 8 above it, and painted green in honor of Venus, with the green sigil of Venus inscribed in the door, and then the second door with black above and orange below, painted like a double Dutch door, and the number 15 above the door. And the third door, this time with orange on top and black on the bottom, and the number 21 above it. And the fourth door, with the number 26 above it, and the sigil of Mars carved into the red wood. And finally, the door with the number 30 carved above it, and the sigil of Jupiter carved into the door. The door is blue in honor of the planet Jupiter. And you walk past the statues of the triplicities that are here, the statues that represent Venus by day, and the moon by night, and Mars as their cooperating partner. And you find yourself at the door at the far end of this 30-yard long hall. And turning back towards the door that you came in, you can see the butt of, or the haunches of, Taurus the bull. And perhaps you can make out two constellations of diamonds that had been inlaid into the back surface. The Pleiades just behind the horns and the head and neck, and here near the butt, just over the tail, the Hyades, the cluster of stars at the rear end of the constellation of Taurus. And now you turn your attention to the doors that are at the far end of the hall from where you came in. You pass through a small vestibule or lobby. We will perhaps visit this space again. And you walk through the doors into what appears to be a grand hall illuminated by daylight and bright early summer light, and we have entered the Hall of Gemini. Let us take a moment to orient ourselves to the Hall of Gemini. Above our heads, the great roof is adorned with the caduceus and winged sandals of Mercury, and it is painted largely orange, but some of the ribbing and the vaulting of the ceiling is painted in rainbow hues, because this is a color or a set of colors that our friend Mercury loves. The columns that support this roof on either side of the hall are gray, and they have the downward horseshoe shape that is associated with the north node. Underneath our feet, the floor has tiles that are painted blue, and they are adorned with the shape of Jupiter's sigil, for this is a place where Jupiter is in his detriment. There is, of course, a central pedestal in the middle of the room, and atop this is a pair of statues, one gold and one silver, or perhaps silvery. Perhaps this is Mercury overlaying the statue, of two young men, fit and in their prime, but one of them casting eyes upwards to the sky as if to be aware of his own divinity and his own immortality, and another one casting eyes downward, aware of his own mortality. These, of course, are the twins, Castor and Pollux, the Gemini, the sons of Zeus, one divine and one mortal, and each sharing half of their divinity and mortality with the other, so partially immortal and partially mortal. These are some of the characteristics of the Hall of Gemini. Looking along the right-hand wall, we see five alcoves or niches and a door into each of the five chambers of the terms. We can walk down that side of the hall, and we see that the first two doors bear the similar characteristics of those double Dutch doors that swing open on top and bottom that we have come to associate with Mercury and Saturn. The first door, with eight above the door, has the sigil of Saturn on the top half of the door, which is painted black, and the bottom half, which is orange, has the sigil of Mercury, to show Saturn by day and Mercury by night. The second door has that in reverse, Mercury on the top for his rulership by day, and Saturn on the bottom for his rulership by night. Above this second door is the number 15. And it is easy to go on to the third door, which is blood red and has the sigil of Mars, his shield and his spear, and the number 21 above the door. And the third door is blue. The fourth door is blue and has the sigil of Jupiter carved into it and the number 26 above the door. And the last of these five doors is green and has the emblem of Venus carved into it. Big round curvy circle with a very rigid cross beneath it and the number 30 above the door. As some of you may have guessed, these numbers are associated with the number of degrees that are in each sign and where the shift occurs from one set of degrees to the other. Walking back to the end of the hall that you entered, passing the doors in turn, we pass Venus last of all, then Jupiter, then Mars, then Mercury by day and Saturn by night, and finally, closest to the entrance you came in, Saturn by day and Mercury by night. Going into the first room, we find 8 chairs, and going into the second room, we find 7 chairs, and going into the third room, we find 6 chairs, and in the hall of Jupiter, we find 5 chairs, and in the last hall, the hall of Venus, we find 4 chairs. And given that I've chosen to work with the Chaldean terms, this is the pattern that we will always find in all of the halls, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4. The Chaldean terms are regular, and we will always see this pattern in all of the halls that we meet, that the first term will have 7 degrees in it, will have 8 degrees in it, and the second hall will have 7 degrees, the third hall will have 6, the fourth hall will have 5, and the last hall of all will have 4. We're now at the far end of the hall from where we came in, having walked past the terms in one direction, back to the beginning, and then back down along the hall. And we turn to find at the backside of the Gemini the 3 lords of the triplicity. And again, there is one column or pedestal on which we find emblems of daylight, like the sun, and one on which we find emblems of moonlight for the night. And between them is a third lord. And here, in the Hall of Gemini, on the pillar associated with day, is the figure of Saturn, dressed in his black robe, carrying his scythe and hourglass. And on the pillar associated with night is youthful Mercury, androgynous, fresh-faced, long-haired, wearing his cap with wings on it, carrying a messenger bag and wearing sandals with wings on them, and carrying the caduceus in his one free hand. Or perhaps I should say their free hand, for it is very difficult to tell here whether Mercury is male or female, as is appropriate for the sign of Gemini. Between them stands the figure of Jupiter, with a dad bod dressed in a blue toga, wearing a golden wreath of laurel leaves that have each been individually dipped in gold, and looking fat, satisfied, and happy with his lot in life. Nowhere near as drunk as our depictions of Bacchus, but bearing something of his character, and a lightning bolt lazily tucked into the belt that supports his toga. Walking back to the entryway to the room by the vestibule, we this time walk along the left-hand side of the hall, the side with the 3 chapels of the decans. Here we find that the first decan has a door with the blue color that we have come to associate with Jupiter and the sign of Jupiter carved into the door. And opening the door, we find a small chapel painted blue in honor of Jupiter, and an altar facing the inner courtyard between two windows, and a painted altarpiece upon the altar. And this picture is the Pamela Coleman Smith Five of Swords. A stormy sky blown by gale force winds, a man in green with a blue tunic underneath, holding three swords and watching two opponents walk away in sorrow, their swords left behind in defeat. Whether this image speaks to the Deccan or not, it serves as a useful reminder. And there are also three other walls with no adornment, as well as the surface for the top of the altar, that contain no information at all yet. But you can decide what goes here yourself, using memory of image, as you construct spaces and information to go into this framework. And moving out of this first chapel of the Deccan into the second, you find that this one has a red door engraved with the emblem of Mars. And going in, you find here the Six of Swords, a man pushing a boat with his daughter and his wife in the front of the boat, six swords standing upright as he pulls his boat through shallow water on his way to islands beyond the gentle lagoon. And this chapel is red in honor of Mars. And going on to the third chapel, we find that this one is bright yellow with golden accents in honor of the sun. And here, the altarpiece on the altar is that of the Seven of Swords, a man in a fez and an orange coat running away from a military camp with five swords, three on one shoulder and two on the other, and leaving behind two swords for those fighting in the distance. Coming out of the Chapel of the Sun, we find ourselves standing by the three statues of the Lords of the Triplicity. And again, we can identify them quite easily. Mercury on the platform by night, Saturn on the platform representing the powers of day, and Jupiter standing between them, looking happy and contented. Walking back along the hall, we find ourselves passing by a number of paintings and pictures. And we come to the first picture representing a person of indeterminate gender. And this person appears to be afflicted with a number of diseases in the arms and shoulders. They are holding their shoulders at an awkward angle as though there were pains in their shoulders, and there are welts and boils upon their arms, and their hands are in the photograph or image, and they are corrupted and gnarled with things like arthritis and thin onion skin. And in fact, the painter has painted this in such a way that you can see that the blood under the skin is not healthy red blood in the arteries and not healthy blue blood in the veins, but in fact it is corrupted and purple. And you can see almost that there are bubbles or inclusions in the blood that simply do not belong there. And the face is distorted with desire and crazy changes of mood. And these are understood to be the diseases or illnesses of Gemini. Going on to the second picture on the wall, we see the interior of a house. And we can see that in this particular case, the room is adorned with wainscoting. The room has been lined in wooden panels, and that there are various cabinets and built-in shelves in the room, and that there are many little secret doors that are open, revealing small objects hidden in the walls. And you can also see that there is a group of plastermen who are opening up the walls and finding new objects inside of the walls, both vermin like mice, as well as small treasures that have been hidden by the owners. In the middle of the room, a group of children seem to be playing a game, and they are throwing dice. And out the window, which is made of small panes of triangular glass, you can see hills and mountains. Going on to the next painting, this one is definitely a landscape outdoors. And in the foreground are barns and granaries. And in the distance, there are hills and mountains. And there is a caravan that is coming down out of the mountains. And you can see on the sides of all of the donkeys and horses in the caravan, and even the camels, that they are not carrying bags or sacks, but they are carrying boxes and chests. And they are very high up on a narrow mountain path, because Mercury is associated with coffers and chests and boxes, as well as high places. And going on to the third picture in a golden frame, you see a map of parts of Europe. And Lombardy, which is the northern part of Italy, is colored orange in honor of Gemini and Mercury. And Brabant, which is, I believe, part of France, and Flanders, which is parts of Belgium and the Netherlands, these are also colored with orange. And the western parts of England and the southwest of England, such as Cornwall, these are also colored orange. And way off in the regions beyond the Black Sea, you see as well in the places of northern Turkey and what used to be the southern Soviet Union, the color of orange there in the lands that used to be called Armenia and are again. And there are a number of cities as well with little orange flags sticking up out of them. And one of them is London, and two in the Netherlands and Belgium are Louvain and Bruges. And in Germany, the city of Nuremberg has an orange flag sticking out of it. And in Spain, Cordova has an orange flag sticking out of it. And in the last painting, a man and a woman stand back to back, tall and straight, upright, and with excellent posture. Their complexion is red and cheery and happy. There is nonetheless an obscurity to their skin, a thickness to it that makes it difficult to sense the blood or other humors moving under the skin. Both of them are long-armed, but each of them raises up a hand, and the hand appears to be sort of short and rather thick. Their hair is dark, almost to the point of being black. They're muscular, but not overly so. These are not bodybuilders, but people who are engaged in active work outside. Their eyes are clear and hazel, and their gaze is strong. And both of them are clearly not in need of glasses, and both of them have a silly, sexy smile on their face as though they enjoy pleasure and happiness. And unlike the painting that showed the diseased person at the far end of the hall, you can see that these people are clever, that they are capable in their own areas of skill, and you can also see by the books and objects in the background that they are skillful in understanding worldly affairs. The astrolabe and the abacus on the shelf behind them, the books of history and the books of literature. And clearly, these are people who know their business and know their world. Take another walk around the hall past the three chapels of the Decans, and past the three lords of the Triplicity, and past the five halls of the Terms. And then you remember the cage, which should be at the foot of the statue of the Gemini. And you see coming to this cage that it is empty. For the Gemini twins keep no prisoners and prevent no power from acting. There is no planet which is in fall in this place. The light coming through the windows on the third floor above you is the good quality light of early summer and spring and daylight and early mid-morning. And the space is rich and alive, and there are places in the glass that are open, and you can feel the wind outside passing through the hall quite easily, and you know that this is a place of change. And one of the ways that you know that this is a place of change is that all of the sculptures and all of the paintings appear to be on frames with casters or wheels so that they can be moved around easily. And the air, it has a heat to it, but it also has a humidity to it because this is an airy, hot, and moist place. And if you were to characterize the light coming through the windows, you would say that this place faced westerly rather than easterly. Take another walk around and observe the statue of the Gemini in the middle of the hall and the three halls of the Decans, dedicated first of all to Jupiter and second to Mars and third to the Sun. Notice the tiles underfoot, which are glazed blue, to remember that here Jupiter is in his detriment. And look above to the orange and rainbow rafters and know that this is a place where Mercury is the ruler. And notice the pillars supporting the roof, which are gray and adorned with the downward pointing horseshoe of the North Node. And then the halls of the Terms, the chambers along the outer wall, the five spaces dedicated first to Saturn by day and then Mercury by night, and then Mercury by day and Saturn by night, and finally Mars, Jupiter, and Venus. And once you have recalled all of these details, we go back the way that we came, first through the hall of Taurus, and then through the hall of Aries, down the stairs, and out into the garden, knowing that we will come back this way on another occasion. Thank you for joining me for this, our third walk through one of the halls of the Astrologer's Palace. Join me next week for an episode with Jenilee Taylor, a woman who used Palace of Memory techniques to memorize a speech even though she had brain surgery as a child. Thank you very much. See you next time.